Our biblical text today expresses the closing of one world and the opening up of another. Isaiah's verses are a prayer by an exiled and powerless people, expressing both a sense of deep desperation about a situation out of control, as well as a bold and confident trust in God. The psalm is a lament that speaks from the same sort of desperate situation. Even the gospel text invokes cosmic cataclysms about the second coming. These texts are given to us on this first Sunday of Advent, a time of waiting, a waiting for the first coming, for the birth of the Holy Infant. Our faith teaches that we live between the first and the second comings of Christ, so we live in an in-between age, an age full of the old as well as the beginning of the new. Advent comes as well as the earth sinks into the depths of winter and darkness. So it is a season of hope. Hope in unlikely circumstances, hope born in unlikely places. As our scripture lessons this morning particularly point to, it is a season of transition to a new world order. And transitions do not come easily. John Shea, the Catholic theologian and storyteller, says of the gospel passage today, "This cosmic imagery expresses and conveys the impact and importance of the revelation of Jesus. When a way of thinking, feeling, and acting has held sway for a long period of time, it can be imagined as heaven and earth, an unshakable cosmic backdrop. When a new way of thinking, feeling, and acting arrives and threatens the established order of things, the best way to express it is cosmic collapse. The sun and moon are snuffed out and stars fall." So indeed, Advent is a time of waiting for the joy of Christmas, but moreover, Advent is a time of darkness before the light, of death perhaps before the birth, a time of reordering, a time of sober reflection on the state of things. Our world is in a constant state of composing and decomposing. Our very human bodies are examples of this. In our private lives, change is always the constant, and we very often experience in our circles death and birth and birth and death. In the body of our society right now and the economic challenges, perhaps we're seeing not merely a recession, but a restructuring of our attitudes toward human welfare and the proper use of wealth. As far as the Christian community goes, which should be living by a different standard of things than the world dishes out, I would hope that we begin to see how money and wealth is one source of spiritual strength and that it should be used to further the household of God, that we should use our resources in ways that enhance human life, in ways that further God's will for us and for all. And in my own life in this Advent season, in this in-between season of dark and light, I am in between in a huge way. In between saying goodbye to you as I prepare to begin ministry in another city. And I can't honestly say it really feels like Isaiah's description of the heavens being torn open or even Jesus' description of the second coming. It isn't quite that dramatic. But it is full of the pain of endings and the promise of beginnings. I want to tell you just a little bit about my journey up to this point that has led to my seeking a call in another church. In the same commentary on today's gospel lesson, John Shea says, speaking of the destruction that Jesus talks about in the lesson's opening lines, Shea says, "From the point of view of those who follow Jesus, this destruction is favorable. It makes way for the advent of summer." Isn't that wonderful? The advent of summer. As a Southwesterner, I like that. "Not the full-blown summer of high heat, but the first bud, difficult to detect, but bursting with promise." I love that phrase. So we might look at our experience in Advent as a bud. difficult to detect in the midst of winter, but bursting with promise. When I read this line, it brought to mind a recent incident. And this little story may sound a little bit overly sentimental or maudlin, but it is for me, as I hope you shall see, a meaningful story and to some degree a personal story. And I share it in the category of Christian witness, where we speak honestly of where we have experienced God in our lives. And I think sometimes in church we don't do that enough. And I want to give witness to the wonderful testimony we had in the hour before this worship service and Sunday Symposium when Tisha Urban spoke on the 23rd Psalm and her own journey through a cancer diagnosis and how that psalm spoke to her. And it was a moving and powerful thing. And Tisha, I honor you for sharing that. I think the more we share with each other what's really going on in our lives, the better we are. So in a much more minor and small way than Tisha did this morning, I share this little story. Earlier this year in April, I took a few retreat days to go to a retreat center in the suburbs of Kansas City, to a place I hadn't been to since the 70s when I was in college, a place I fondly remember. And I picked that place, I think, because of its sort of fond memories, for I was needing a place to really rest and reflect for a while. I felt like I had spiritually hit a wall. I was becoming more aware that though I had immensely enjoyed my time in this community, for we, you and I, had what felt like to me a good and solid and growing ministry, I was yet aware that it was time for me to contemplate moving on, that the ministry was reaching perhaps a good and natural closing. And, you know, endings are sometimes meant to be, just like death itself. Death can be a natural release from earthly suffering. Not that I was suffering with you. That was a bad analogy, but... which is probably why I should never leave the script, and I was doing so. But let me rewind that. So I'm just aware of what, as I always am, of what the wider community are experiencing now. We've had several passings recently, and we've got several seriously ill, and so that's been on my mind. But in that awareness that I was needing to search for a new ministry, I couldn't find a place that really called to me, that really attracted me, a place where I felt I could really use my gifts, a place where I could feel that I could be all that God created me to be, honestly and openly. So my response to that was to go on retreat. And at this retreat center, they have a little hotel. And one afternoon, I'm sitting in the chair of my hotel room, and it's a typical motel-hotel arrangement. You get the little desk and the little wooden chair, you know, and I'm sitting there. And I've got the chair turned around looking outside the one window in the room, and on the other side of the pane of glass is a rose bush with a single bud on it. This is early April in Kansas City. Things are beginning just barely beginning to peek out and bud out a little bit, more so than it was up here at that point. But it was still at the end of winter, and it was still cold outside. And somehow this visual of the bud, this one single bud holding forth on an otherwise barren bush in rather stark relief, full of promise, really captured me. And I immediately saw in that visual of the bud, this is a sentimental maudlin part, something about my own yearnings to blossom, that my life perhaps was at that moment kind of like that bud, not yet fully blossomed, but knowing the cycle of nature bound to blossom. And this is the really kind of embarrassing part to tell, but those of you who live alone, maybe you do the same thing. I don't know. I occasionally talk to myself out loud. It feels good to hear a voice, you know. And sometimes I can kind of better get a grasp on what I'm saying. Sometimes I practice sermons saying out loud so that I can hear it because it's different. And on that day, my heart was so full that I started praying out loud as I want to do. And all of a sudden, out comes this prayer, and it came out kind of fully formed, more like a poem, and here it is. Mother, Father, God, Eternal Spirit, express through me that I in all my years may yet be as a bud on a tree, full of promise to flower with thee. Now that's pretty much purple prose. You know, that's not going to go down in the annals of great spiritual writing anytime soon. But it was an incredibly honest and heartfelt yearning of my spirit toward the infinite, in the hope and in the prayer that I might realize my fuller potential. So the prayer was said, and I went on about my business. And in November, as we have announced, I am called to a church in St. Louis. Now, I had earlier scheduled a trip back to the same retreat center in the suburbs of Kansas City, this time not for a private retreat, but for a conference where there were a couple of big-name Christian theologians there, namely John Shelby Spong and Bart Ehrman, who we saw in videotape classes over the summer in my early class. So I went back to this retreat center the first week of November, and in checking into the hotel, I was surprised that they gave me the same room that I had back in April. And at first I thought, maybe they do this, you know, because they know people maybe like it here and they give them a familiar space. And then I thought, well, that's a crummy business model. You know, that'd be hard to keep up with. So I chalked it up to an accident. I arrived on a Monday, and on Tuesday, the St. Louis Church and I had finally agreed on everything, and they faxed to me my contract at the hotel there, and I took it back to my room and sat down at the desk and went over all the details to make sure that it was what we had agreed upon. And then it hit me that I was sitting there in that chair at that desk in that hotel room in the very same exact place that I had been sitting 7 months previous in April, praying this heartfelt prayer for direction in my life, for blossoming in my life. And today, on that day, I was sitting there going over the contract for what was ostensibly the answer to prayer, a discernible answer to prayer. And this was a spot some 600 miles from home, a place I have not regularly gone to. So it struck me that maybe I was in a Kairos moment. Now, I am not given to little miracle stories on how God works in our lives, if truth be told. My own understanding of God is rather naturalistic. I think that God works largely, perhaps totally, inside the natural laws of nature and of physics, and what we call the miraculous and the paranormal really works within the quite normal things that we experience. And yet, I couldn't deny the power of this moment, for me at least. I couldn't deny the coincidence. A coincidence, you know, is not necessarily merely accident. It's a coincidence. It's a dual incidence, perhaps, of the human and the divine coming together to work simultaneously. So maybe it was a weird accident, or maybe, as I would prefer to think of it, it was God speaking to me. But this incident put my mind and my heart at ease that I was doing the right thing. This right thing, I want to be clear, is not without lots of sadness. For saying goodbye has not been for me an easy thing to do, as I've realized that I've been with you longer than I've been with any church. So 5 years is a long time of building relationship and building friendship. And as I get busier with all the transition tasks, you know, doing everything I need to do to get moved, I've had my moments of doubt. I've, like the Jews in the wilderness, I've wanted to say, wait a minute, could we go back? You know, it was more comfortable back there to the known. And yet I call to mind that incident in the hotel room, and I'm again relieved that I am probably doing what I need to be doing and that all will be well. Now, I suspect that there might be more little coincidences like this in your life as well as in mine if we would but be open to them, if we would but be awake to them, if we would but watch for them. Again, Tisha told a wonderful story of a coincidence that brought Psalm 23 to her mind that began her on the spiritual journey. in the midst of a difficult human journey. I think a lot of times these things happen in our lives if we just are open to them, that sometimes we get so busy and so wrapped up in less important things that the very handiwork of God just goes by without notice. Feel not God's presence, but God's absence, when perhaps I think God's presence is brimming in our lives. I think my own theological construct on this, on how God works in the world, is that God is always present. It would not be logical or rational otherwise. But in our lack of awareness, we see absence when there's really presence there. So it's not God's absence, it's our lack of awareness, our lack of mindfulness. To affirm the presence of God in the face of the absence of God is to keep watch, is to keep our minds and hearts on the promise that our biblical tradition so clearly teaches. John Shea goes on to speak of this mindfulness in his comments. He's talking about having a consciousness of God, an awareness of God as we go about the routine tasks of our lives, of what he calls a watcher consciousness, a consciousness of being on alert, of being grounded in the awareness of God. Shea quotes Eckhart Tolle, a contemporary spiritual teacher. Tolle talks about a dimension of consciousness that is unconditioned to the things of the world. When consciousness rests in this dimension, Tolle says, you'd be surprised at the alertness that is there when you allow what is. When you allow what is. It is the alertness out of which action arises, should that be necessary. An alertness to God's presence, out of which action, proper action, arises. In the old biblical story of the birth of the baby, we see the culmination of this watchfulness of God's work in the world. In the hopes of the second coming, we see, I think, a poetic way of expressing how God will eventually rectify all creation to the good. For in Paul's immortal words elsewhere, we know that all things work together for good for those who love God, who are called according to God's purpose. God is present as our earth continues its journey into bitter cold and darkness. In that darkness, God will birth the new age of a light beyond all light and a love beyond all love, that which we call the Christ, the expression of God's very nature to humanity itself. In our very human journey together in these ever-darkening days, let us keep watch of God's expression among us. Whatever you are facing in your life, whatever we are facing in our church community, whatever all of us are facing in the struggles before us in our global community, keep watch so that we might be aware of God with us.